Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today, it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Jared Irby from Mobile, Alabama, brother from the Collective Genius Mastermind. And Jared is a president and a founder of the Irby Home Builders, the Home Buyers, forgive me. Hi, Jared. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Mike.
Could you tell folks a little bit about you? You live on the Gulf Coast, and how are you enjoying living there? How do you deal with hurricanes? Do you do hurricane chasing? Do you do any of that fun sport activities?
Well, sure. So we'll dive right into it. And forgive me if my voice is a little scratchy. I'm fighting a little bronchitis, so I might be off my game talking. I've lived in Alabama, and specifically on the Gulf Coast. I was born there and left for a little while, lived in Europe, my family growing up for a while. But ultimately, I'm really fond of the area. It's you know, beautiful area, great climate, lots to do, hunting, fishing, boating, just, you know, great atmosphere on the beach. So I love it here. But we do have hurricanes to deal with. They're not as frequent as you may think. Just if you watch the news, they kind of sensationalize the whole thing a little bit. It's not as big of a deal, maybe as like tornadoes and stuff in other areas. It's, you know a hurricane's coming a week in advance. You have plenty of time to prepare. It's, you know, it's obviously not good, but it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. And all the buildings are built to withstand, you know, really high wind codes and things like that. So other than our insurance being a little bit more expensive, it's really not a huge deal.
Yeah, I hear you. That makes sense. If you're prepared, you could deal with hurricanes. I want to compare this to the snow, because I'm in New York, and I often go upstate New York to Rochester, New York, where my mother lives, and they get a lot of snow, and they're prepared. So when they get a massive snow blizzard, it's totally fine. You're probably the same way. Hey, it's another hurricane. Big deal. Like, you guys get a little snow.
Yeah, exactly. Except snow is 100 times worse because it's cold. So at least when it's a hurricane, it's hot. So it is what it is. But there's you know it's coming, so it's no big deal.
I appreciate the optimism. I'll take snow all day long. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about your business. And you buy, fix, and flip houses to investors. I guess you sell, most of the houses you sell are to investors, right?
Sure. So we're kind of in a smaller market, you know, less than 500,000 people in the whole market. So we don't really specialize in any one thing other than, you know, distressed real estate with a big focus on single family homes. So we've got a team of acquisition people that are going out and acquiring, properties below market. We then go in and kind of evaluate, hey, do we want to hold this ourselves? Does it fit our criteria for our rental portfolio? And do we have the money today? That kind of thing. Or do we flip it to another investor, or do we do a flip on it ourselves? So we work with a lot of investors to wholesale properties too, and also sell some turnkey, you know, properties as well with tenants already in place. So our business kind of runs the gamut, and where we're at is really a cash flow type market. We're not super heavy on appreciation, although there is some, but most of the properties cash flow really well. So most people are buying the properties to hold.
Got you. So what does it mean, cash flow really well? So can you define, if somebody buys a property, what does a typical property sell for? Is an investment grade cash flow property? What's a typical price, and what kind of a rent it collects, and what kind of cash flow does it generate?
Sure. So we're looking at, you know, at providing, anytime we do a turnkey property, we really want to provide, you know, a 10-12% actual cash on cash return, you know, to our investors. You know, I know some people advertise more than that and things like that, but we try to factor in, you know, real expenses, real costs, that kind of thing, and still deliver, you know, at least a 12%, you know, plus return to our investors, on a turnkey property. And obviously, you know, if you don't do as much work to it, and we're in a, you know, not a great area, but not a horrible area either, and we could do a Section 8 property, you can get returns, you know, even higher than that.
Understood. So when you say cash on cash, you mean without leverage? So people buy it for cash?
I would say, you know, 12% with leverage, probably, you know, 8 or 9%, you know, with, you know, without leverage, if it's, you know, paying cash for it.
Gotcha. So what's a typical, what's an average price? So what would an investor buy it for from you, and what kind of monthly rent?
Well, sure. So depending on, you know, where in town the property is, you know, we're looking at, you know, a price of $100,000 can buy you, you know, $1,300 bucks a month in rent. You could also buy a $50,000 house that gets $1,000 a month in rent, you know, if you want to go kind of the Section 8 route. So we really have a pretty broad range of prices. So it's kind of hard to say that, you know, we may have an average price, but it's kind of pretty spread out, you know, evenly between the kind of cheaper stuff that cash flows, you know, really well, but requires a little bit more work, you know, as far as a lower income, to the things that, you know, are much more stable, but, you know, don't necessarily throw off as much cash flow. So it's kind of all over the map, you know, in regards to that.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's very similar to many other markets where the properties that sell $50,000-$60,000 range, they could be rented, you know, $800, $900, $1,000 a month, and the cash flow is stronger, but you're dealing with the C minus neighborhood, and you know, like you mentioned, $100,000 property in Mobile, Alabama, is a nicer property than, you know, many other markets, and so that's very consistent. So one quick question. When you sell these properties do you sell them to local investors, or do you sell them out of town investors?
So we do have a couple of out of town investors that buy stuff from us. At the moment, you know, we have really good relationships locally. So we've been selling for the most part to local investors, aside from a few that are from out of town. You know, so I think a lot of people haven't recognized, you know, the market we're in yet as a big cash flow market. There's been some more emphasis on, you know, Birmingham and Alabama and other areas of the country, you know, but I don't think we've been, you know, really identified as a big cash flow market. And, you know, in some ways, I don't really go out advertising that fact either, because I like to buy properties cheaper, you know, by not having
you don't want competition.
Yeah. So, you know, we like, while there is some out of town folks, there's not a ton at the moment.
Gotcha. The reason I asked the question is I was going to do a follow-up question. If you provide management on these properties, so somebody buys a property from you, they need generally turnkey management. Or do you have professional management companies that do this for you?
We do. So we provided our own just management solo for a long time to our own properties, and I think we're really good at it. But we've actually partnered up with a local property management company where we, you know, partner up with them to handle the management. You know, they're a lot bigger and more capable of handling it in a really great way. And then we kind of supervise the whole, you know, the whole thing.
That makes sense. Most bigger players have no choice. You either develop your own in-house management, significant operation, or you outsource. And finding quality outsourced management is not easy, but if you're local and you can work with somebody and influence them by giving them a good amount of your own properties, you could probably find a good, you know, some good players.
Yeah, sure. We've kind of committed to, you know, hundreds of units with them. So, you know, I feel like we get great treatment. They're literally offices right down, you know, a block away from us. And, you know, we've known them for a long time. So we work really close with them on the management side of things.
That makes sense. So let's talk a little bit about what else do you invest in? Do you invest into some smaller multifamily, bigger multifamily? Are those properties present interesting opportunities as well?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, like I said, being in a smaller market, it's hard to, you know, specialize in any one thing. So we have started buying multifamily in the last year and a half and have acquired, you know, an 11 unit, a 20 unit and some, you know, quads and a fiveplex and then also a 64 unit apartment complex. So kind of all over the map as far as the sizes goes. You know, once you get past the 50 units here in town, there's really not a lot of inventory that kind of larger property. It's more smaller mom and pop, you know, 20 to 50 unit type of properties. You know, there are a few bigger ones, obviously, but those are mostly like class A and we're focusing on like low B, you know, C class type apartments.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. It's a very interesting observation that the bigger properties are all class A, and then the smaller mom and pop properties are a little bit lower grade. But that's where sort of better opportunity if you're local. But for an out of town investor, it's probably pretty hard to get into those properties because of the management issues.
Yeah, sure. And I think some of it has to do with, you know, land has always been fairly affordable here. So why build up in an apartment when you can just kind of build out, you know, single family, you know, pretty reasonably. And also being in the South, there's probably, you know, kind of that sense of home ownership that, you know, may not translate everywhere else that well yet, although it is changing, you know, over the last even 10 years, I've seen toward more renters and things like that. But yes, and being an out of town person, you know, buying a 10 or 15 unit, you've really got to have great management in place, you know, to make that work. And a lot of these deals trade, you know, off market and it's hard to find out about them. So, you know, there really hasn't been a ton of out of town buying in the multifamily side around here, except on the larger class A type stuff.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's many guys in CG who operate in the apartment complex space, and there's a good old rule, look for at least 70 doors or more. Mm-hmm. I mean, 70 doors is sort of the entry level to have some kind of economy of scale. And most of the stuff that you're buying is below that threshold, and no big player is going to look at this. Just economy of scale is missing, and on-site management is hard. So it is pretty much a local player's game to buy and operate these properties, even though they probably cash flow like a monster, but it's a local ownership, local management type of setup.
Yeah, definitely. Unless you have a lot of units, it's hard to trust, you know, a management company that's not there, you know, that you're not able to put your eyes on a C-class property. I mean, you need to be out there looking at it, you know, fairly frequently, or have an amazing management staff, and, you know, having more units just lets you afford that great staff. Otherwise, you're kind of stuck, you know, trusting a property management company that you don't really know.
That makes sense. That's absolutely makes sense. And your buying is very opportunistic. When you're operating in a market, you almost, the good old expression is no lead left behind. So if you have anything interesting coming across your door steps, and it's a deal worth either buying and holding or buying and flipping, you're looking into this. So one quick question on your rental portfolio. Are you able to get bank financing locally, even on these inexpensive properties, or are you going with some national players that have, like, you know, CoreVest or Lima One, any of the big boys who finance portfolios?
Sure, we've had great success with local banks. They seem to be really, you know, keen on, you know, obviously some aren't into single family rentals, and some aren't into multifamily, but we haven't had any problem getting, you know, getting financing, especially long term financing, on any of our stuff, and at what I would consider pretty good terms as well. You know, that definitely beats a lot of the national players, you know, and so I think local banks, if you've got them, are the way to go.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It seems to be the story coming from many, many folks I know. If you can get a great community bank or local bank relationship, there's just nothing better. The only thing you have to worry about is if you outgrow them, at some point they may not be able to give you any more money. But at least initially, it's probably the best and easiest relationship.
Yeah, Mike, that you're 100% right. That's the only thing that we've seen is, you know, when you do start, you know, borrowing, you know, seven figures and more, you know, it does start getting a little, you know, more questions and things like that. And they obviously they do have lending limits. We're not bumping any of those at the moment. But we spread our business around three or four, you know, local banks. You know, some love the multifamily, some love to give, you know, credit lines, some love to do, you know, single family portfolios. So we kind of spread our business around a little bit and try to have multiple relationships going at once. So that way, if one does slack off, you know, we have others in the pipeline to help us out. So I think diversification there is really important.
Yeah, that's a great point. Diversification is a keyword. It's a keyword in everything. When we invest, we constantly look at diversification. I'm a fund manager and a fund level. That is the number one kind of a goal, is to spread the risk around. Whether you're raising money or you're investing or you're getting bank financing, it's the same concept. Do you have any interesting kind of great strategies how to acquire these deals? Most of the listeners are just, you know, passive investors, but maybe a few active guys. Do you have a great strategy how you find these distressed deals? Do you send postcards? How do you find these type of deals?
Yeah, so we do a ton of marketing. My background is marketing and sales. So I've kind of always taken the approach that this business is marketing and, you know, and sales as well, as far as negotiating and that kind of thing. So we do everything marketing wise. We do a ton of direct mail. We do a ton of online advertising with social media and pay-per-clicks. We get a ton of referrals from agents. We've, you know, really focus hard on working our network of agents in the local area. And then, you know, we put out bandit signs. We, you know, do, you know, cold calling, all kinds of stuff, you know, pretty much everything you could possibly think of from a marketing standpoint, you know, we do a lot of. And so we have a pretty diversified, you know, stream of leads coming in. When I first started, though, you know, I was buying just from agents. You know, I had a couple of good agent relationships. And, you know, for one or two deals a month, you know, buying from agents or and even wholesalers, that's eventually I started buying from wholesalers. And then we bought at auctions and things like that. You kind of have to, you know, build relationships if you're trying to acquire one or two or three deals a month. You can do that without any marketing pretty easily just by working, you know, the relationships. Like, you know, that you see people on a podcast, reach out to them, wholesalers, whatever it is, you know, you can, you know, local agent in your area, a couple of those relationships could yield massive results.
Yeah, that makes sense. Real Estate 101, before the days of the social media, before the days of the internet, it was a handshake with agents, buying them dinner or lunch and
yeah,
a good rapport. That makes sense. But today's day and age, you almost have to. If you don't market heavily in the competitive environment, the ones who market will take they'll catch the fish and you'll be.
Yeah, Mike, you're 100% right. And, you know, when you're doing it at our level, trying to do 20 deals plus in a month, yeah, you have to do massive marketing. But when I was working directly with agents and wholesalers and things like that, you know, my marketing there was, like you said, taking them out to lunch, you know, buying dinner, having a really great relationship, making sure I pick up the phone and check in all the time, that kind of thing. More of a networking, like a very intentional networking angle to it. So marketing can be a lot of different things, but, you know, but you have to definitely take massive action on it. That's for sure. If you want to get a deal.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing. I live in New York and there's so much more of the network marketing here for the reason that every asset is so much, you know, if you get one referral, you could be dealing with $1 million asset.
Yeah.
Versus for you, it's a much smaller deal. You need volume. If you don't have the volume, it's tough to have a sustainable business. So makes sense. So what do you see your markets doing? You mentioned that the market is mostly cash flow. It's not a general appreciating market. In order for the market to appreciate, you need jobs. Something's got to change. Some big employers got to move in the area or a big army base open. But assuming just things are steady, is there any direction in your kind of neck of the woods? Is anything happening or it's just a steady Eddie market for a long time?
Sure. So when I said there was not really a lot of appreciation, there hasn't been in the, you know, under $100,000 type rental house that we sell a lot of to investors. But on our flipping side, there actually has been quite a lot, especially in Baldwin County, which is right next door. We operate in Mobile and Baldwin County as kind of one market that's, you know, maybe an hour from end to end. And that county has had quite a bit of appreciation. It's on the beach, and there's a lot of new building going on, and there's a ton of population growth. Some of the highest population growth in the country is in that county. But then as far as Mobile,
why is that? Why are people moving?
One of the cities was voted, you know, best place to retire in the U.S. I think by World News or something like this, a big publication, for a couple years in a row. The cost of living is really low. The cost of land is still relatively low. The housing prices are very affordable. There's great school systems, that kind of thing. So there's been a ton of population growth there. And then what we're seeing in Mobile right next door is there's a small amount of a population growth, but there's a ton of jobs coming in at the moment. We've got an Airbus to come in, and they've brought, you know, hundreds and hundreds of jobs, and are still building, you know, assembly plants here. We also have a big shipping port that's one of the largest in the country. We're at the intersection of two major interstates, and then we have a huge rail network as well. And all of that kind of leads to having a lot of industry, like real, you know, real nitty gritty type of industry, like shipping, shipbuilding, you know, a lot of import export type of stuff. And then there's a ton of manufacturing with chemical plants and all kinds of, you know, other manufacturing type of things coming in. And so there's actually been a ton of job growth. A lot of people live in Baldwin County, work in Mobile County. I think that's why there's some of the population growth there. But as Baldwin County's prices have run up, we're starting to see that more and more people are staying in Mobile County as well. And so it looks on the higher end of the market that those prices are starting to rise as well. So fundamentally, there's a lot of good paying jobs coming in, and that have come in very recently, that is starting to kind of translate into that growth.
Yeah, I appreciate your great explanation of the economy growth and the prospects. It sounds like there's a significant upside from the retiring community, and then the jobs are moving in, and Alabama is a low tax state. Is that a state tax in Alabama?
There is a state income tax, but there's also to extremely low property taxes. And relatively speaking, our insurance isn't that bad. So from a cash flow standpoint, you know, the income tax really, you know, we've kind of looked, Florida has no income tax right next to us, but substantially higher property taxes. So, you know, you kind of make up for it depending on your situation. But yeah, extremely low cost of living state, you know, probably lowest in, you know, one of the lowest in the country. And our median house price in Mobile is still significantly less than the U.S. average. So we're really, you know, we're kind of, it makes affordable sense to come here. And that's also why employers come. And obviously employers bring jobs, and jobs bring population growth. Population growth drives, you know, everything else. So, so that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's interesting. The affordable stuff in every market seems to do well when the interest rates rise. So given the fact that we've seen a little bit of interest rate, you know, jumps over the last couple of years, significant increases, the market might be looking even more attractive to folks who get affordable housing.
Yeah, I think so. And we've also been really fortunate that over the last, you know, couple of elections, we've gotten a lot of really kind of fiscally conservative type, you know, business guys in as mayor and you know, in the city council and stuff like that. So they've really been focusing on, you know, bringing businesses in. Our Chamber of Commerce are really active in recruiting new businesses in. So I see the trend like accelerating, you know, in a positive way.
Well, it makes sense. It's Alabama is a red state, business friendly, and you know it's true capitalism. I live in the Socialist Republic of New York.
Sure.
A little different here.
And look, you know, to each his own on politics. But you know, as far as you know, I want business guys running my city because that's gonna translate into businesses doing well. And when businesses do well, real estate does well. So.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm on the same way. I'm certainly, I don't like big governments because the big governments and politicians, professional politicians, they don't do good work running.
Yeah, sure.
You're better off with businessmen. We had a great mayor, Bloomberg. He was a businessman running New York. He was doing a great job. And now you have a little bit of a socialist mayor. So.
Yeah, very good mayor. I mean, yeah, that was a pretty good time for New York for sure.
Yeah, it's strange. We've had a couple of good mayors, and this mayor is just I'm right down the middle. I'm libertarian, and but I struggle really with too much socialistic policies in the city. Unfortunately, a lot of money goes to waste. It's a quick joke. We were driving this morning, and before the snow started, and a lot of dumb trucks put a lot of salt already on the ground way in advance. So my wife and I were just chatting. Why are they doing this? There's no snow yet. Well, because they have an annual budget. They got to go spend the money because they got to milk exactly, the city. Yeah. They don't go spend the snow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It
doesn't make any sense to, if you're not in that game. But, if you're used to running a business where you have to account for your expenses, then, you think a lot differently than if you're just given a big bag of money to go spend. So,
yeah, that's another discussion. Anyway, we're kind of coming up on the end. Just wanted to ask you, what are your best advice to listeners? Any great advice, any great thoughts? Is there a good book that you'd like folks to recommend?
Yeah. So, I'm in business, and so I read a ton of books. I think the key isn't what you read so much as that you're really reading and investing in the topic that you're really embroiled in. So right now we're kind of embroiled in scaling our business. And so we're really focusing on, team building and processes and systems. So, we're kind of exploring that. So read, I think is important no matter what the actual book is. There's tons of resources on that. As far as best advice and that I've kind of lived my life by is to take massive action, and if you have a lot of passive investors on here, they probably at one point took massive action to get to the point where they could passively invest. And I know that once I've done really well, it's easy to kind of sit around on the sidelines and, live a good life and that kind of thing. But if you really want to go to the next level, it's all in, taking a lot of action in a very intentional direction. And that's how we really try to operate, in my business. And that's the kind of people that we try to recruit into our business as well.
That makes sense. Yeah, I love action-driven everything. The good old joke, you go ready, fire, aim.
Yeah, exactly.
You're gonna keep aiming for a long time, you'll never fire. So you need to.
Yeah, it's kind of like a guided missile. You fire it first, and then you like drive it around a little bit, right?
Yeah, so. you have to get going, and then you figure out as you go whether you're going in the right direction. Otherwise, analysis paralysis takes too long to take action on anything. And this is in an imperfect world. So you will make mistakes and take it for granted. Just learn from mistakes. And that's the whole life is about. So
exactly. So that's the best advice that I could give anybody in this business, especially is, very quick, decisive action. It wins when the markets are going up, going down, when you're buying, when you're selling, quick, decisive action. Don't wait around.
Sounds great. How would folks find you if they have any questions? They want to go buy a house from you in Alabama. How would they get a hold of you? Is that a good website, good email?
Sure. Best way to get in touch with me is, on Facebook. You can follow me there. Just search for Jared Irby on Facebook. You can hit us up on our company website. It's irbyhomebuyers.com. And maybe you could drop a link for us. And I also have a little real estate mastermind group. It's called Empire Forge Mastermind. you know, where we kind of sit around and talk about a lot of these topics as well, and really kind of go into the nitty gritty over a couple day time span, you know, and how to build and scale your business. And we focus a lot on the rental investing side of things too. So, you know, EmpireForgeMastermind.com as well. So.
Jared, thank you for sharing. Thank you for being the guest on the podcast. I appreciate your time, your wisdom, and your insight. And I wish you well. I'll see you at the next CG meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. Great talking to you, Mike, and I'll see you soon.
See you soon. Take care.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing, Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.